This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila Ganesan, together with Limsu Ann and Dashrin Johan. So before the break, we were talking about the Prihatin stimulus package and how it doesn't address the needs of groups that are, I suppose, socially at risk, particularly women. And we spoke to a representative from the Women's AIDS organization on how some of these gaps can be bridged. And now on to our second story. We have a question up on Twitter.
So we're asking you, if you listen to speeches by political leaders, right now 53% of you say 53% of you say, oh, you listen to only parts of it. About 15% say you only listen to that you do listen to the whole thing, and another 33% say that no, you don't listen to the speeches at all. So you can keep taking that poll on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us your thoughts. You know, why do you listen to the speeches, or why do you not? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And so the reason we're asking you that is, you know, if there's one person if we've become quite familiar with over the period of the MCO, that would be Makcik Kia, the pisang goreng seller.
Yes.
I mean, most of us would have seen Makcik Kia starting to trend across social media platforms after she was referenced in Prime Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's announcement of the Prihatin Rakyat Economic Stimulus Package, and that was on the 27th of March.
Yeah. So the Prime Minister used Makcik Kia as an example at the end of his speech to illustrate how an average Malaysian would benefit from the cash aid given by the government. He described Makcik Kia as a pisang goreng seller who lives in a PPR flat with a husband who is a government pensioner and also an e-hailing driver, while her daughter is a PTPTN borrower. So Makcik Kia's household income was below 4,000 ringgit a month, and he goes on to describe the type an amount of aid Makcik Kia and her family will receive.
Mm. And if you remember, right, the Bantuan Prihatin Rakyat speech was quite a long one. I think it was like 25 pages long or something like that. So to just have that, to humanize it at the end, to illustrate how the aid would trickle down into the pockets of a Malaysian, it sort of gave a different twist to something that I think many of us would often find hard to digest in a short amount of time just listening to it, either on TV or on radio. And then after that, you know, just a quick, I had a quick glance at social media, and that showed like Makcik Kia trending, and people were talking about it in generally positive generally positive terms.
Yeah. Mm. And it's that humanizing of political speeches, you know, that touch of relatability that we want to discuss today, because this isn't an isolated incident. If we you know, we did see a continuation of this form of messaging in the additional Prihatin SME economic package speech that Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin gave, you know, and this time we had three new characters or individuals that were added to the list. The first was Madam Lee's Hair Salon, which is a micro enterprise with two local employees earning less than 4,000 ringgit a month. The second example was Mikolo Haji Saleh, which is a slightly larger business than Lee's Beauty Salon, with 7 workers, and this included 2 foreign workers. And the last example was Surjit Kaur Sendirian Berhad, which is a medium-sized company involved in furniture manufacturing. And so in each of these examples, you know, it's described how the employers would benefit from aid like wage subsidies, deferment of EPF employer contribution, as well as a discount on the levy on foreign employees.
Mm. And it's also not just in the speeches announcing the economic stimulus packages. If you look slightly further back, about 3 weeks ago, that, you know, right now it felt like months ago, we also saw a more conversational tone taken in the Prime Minister's second speech regarding COVID-19 and the movement control order.
Mm. So if we think about the first speech on the 16th of March about which officially announced the implementation of the movement control order, that was, from what I remember, that was in relatively formal language. You know, it was describing sort of what businesses would be closed, sort of the laws that are being the laws under which the MCO is being implemented. I think it did leave a lot of Malaysians confused as to what exactly was happening. There were a lot of people on social media calling it a lockdown, despite that it wasn't explicitly mentioned during the speech. Yeah. We saw a lot of panic and confusion and uncertainty as well, especially when we look at the university students. You know, what happened with them? They were told that they have to leave the dorms. That led to a mass exodus of people trying to balik kampung, you know, to go back to their own home states.
Yeah.
Then on the 18th, which was the first day of the MCO, the Prime Minister made another speech, this time speaking more conversationally in a colloquial language. Throughout his speech, he pleaded with Malaysians to just stay at home or do duduk diam-diam di rumah.
Mm-hmm. Trending hashtag.
Yep. He made it clear that the MCO was not meant for people to balik kampung or to go on holiday or to have kenduris.
Mm. And for many, that speech actually seems to have made a bigger impact than that initial announcement of the MCO. So what is it about these speeches, you know, the examples of machikias that almost extends the shelf life of, you know, the Prime Minister's words? Mm-hmm. You know, why do some political speeches resonate more with some with people than others?
Mm, so to get further into this, earlier today I spoke to distinguished professor Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharudin. He's the director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies at University Kebangsaan Malaysia, and he helped to provide some insights into this. So I think during times of crisis like this, such as what we're facing with the COVID-19 pandemic, dealing with the MCO, we look to our leaders for some guidance and direction. So first, Prof. Shamsul explains what makes a speech resonate with the people.
Well, I think the most important thing, his speeches are all given in Malay. So there's a particular way of shaping your speeches in Malay, because somehow you have to weave into it in your simple short sentences. You have to weave all sorts of pantun, perumpamaan and so on, and stories to allow people to associate with the points being made by the Prime Minister himself. So, but the most important thing is not only his speeches.
Mm-hmm.
What is the follow-up after that that allow the speech to remain in the realm of the public discussion? Because only two people under him can repeat his messages or amplify his messages, which is the senior minister, now Ismail, or the Director General of Ministry of Health. So in that sense, his speeches remain in the public hearts and minds continuously because it's been repeated in various forms.
Mm. And does it matter sort of how he's delivered the message? I think initially when we saw when he was talking about the movement control order, you know, his first speech was a bit more of a formal tone. And then he had a second speech which was telling people in more conversationally, saying like, duduk diam-diam di rumah, just stay at home. Is it important to have that difference?
Well, I think he wants to make a speech which is more people-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people-friendly means you have to use colloquial language, bahasa pasar. There's nothing wrong in using it in that context to allow people to make sense of what he means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of fun and responses if I see in the social media, mm-hmm. you know, how people, you know, they got on into this machikia issue. And it's interesting for me. And they're making a lot of caricature about this character called machikia. So all these are very important symbolism, everyday symbolism that people can relate to.
Mm. And yes, and you, so you mentioned that machikia, right? And in two separate economic stimulus packages, he's used examples like that. So of examples of your average Malaysian, machikia, Madam Lee, Haji Saleh. How important is relatability in making sure that his message is sort of passed on to the people?
Well, I think what he does then is to be inclusive, all right? You know, machikia can be seen as only Malays, you know, but then in this country, it's not like Malays, whatever you say, you like it or not, there are other ethnic groups. And mm-hmm. how do you allow them to enter into this without focusing on machikia, which could be as a signal and symbol that could be misunderstood? So I think in the inclusion of Madam Lee, even Haji Saleh, well, that's the gender point that he probably people don't realize what he's trying to make, and Surjit Kaur. So I think on the whole, his speech writers must have reminded him. They receive feedback. They also read, because in the PM's department, there's a section on social media observing. Mm-hmm. So I think the combination of all this information allowed him to not improve, but to expand his scope of concern for audience or special audience and make people feel comfortable much bigger than the first speech.
Mm. And what impact does, you know, speeches like this, messaging like this have on Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin's persona as a prime minister, and how does this compare to previous prime ministers?
Well, I believe that the previous prime ministers are all upper class They are, Tengku is a royal family and so on. And I don't believe they are, from the speeches that I've heard, they are just speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you have to be fair. There's no COVID-19. I mean, there's no crisis except for May 13th. So it's quite a different context. So it's difficult for me to make the comparison. But I do know that from the text of the speeches of previous prime ministers, the issue decides on how they present it, you know. And I think Mahyudin and Abdullah Abdawi, both of them from a very religious background, parents and also families, has a different way of expressing this. There's a lot of, you can see in his speeches, a lot more phrases from recitation, from verses from the Quran and Hadith and whatever he has to offer. And I think this goes way beyond the urban population. It goes to rural population as well. And the more religious young population, because I think there's a lot of religious young population in Malaysia who are responding to this.
Mm-hmm. So it's that idea of making sure that one message is enough to reach all parts of society.
Almost. I think he's trying his best,
mm-hmm.
and he can't reach everywhere and everyone. Because you must know that not everybody watches his program.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody has the opportunity to see him talking,
mm-hmm.
or listening to his radio. There are pockets of people who, who listen to half of it, a quarter of it, depending on what each and everyone is doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see the disparate manner in which these speeches or his speeches are being listened to. But I think what makes it stronger is the fact that the government has limited on to two people to make press conference. That's very important, which means that whatever Mahyudin said is repeated and elaborated by two announcements every day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, after that, through the advertisement programs and radio and social media, in WhatsApp, Instagram, Telegram, I mean, you must have seen all those songs. Old song, they give new lyrics using mm-hmm. the phrases from the slogan as well as new song. So these are people reception. I would say that that is the reception people have from those speeches. And quite clearly, they share his ideas and become viral through various digital forms.
Mm. And so if we take sort of a more global perspective, right, and I mean, the whole world is trying to handle COVID-19 as best as they can. We've seen a lot of world leaders come forward to address their nations. How has Mahyudin's speeches and delivery fared compared to other leaders in other countries? Yeah. And I think especially recently, we saw a lot of comparison to Lee Hsien Loong's speech.
Well, I think this comparison is a very superficial comparison because each context demands a particular focus, you know,
mm-hmm.
like Lee Hsien Loong now, I returned to all his speeches in Malay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was different before. And now with the CD19 up again, then his speeches is different. And you must know that the amount of people, the number of people, his audience, the Malay-speaking audience is very small compared to millions that Mahyudin has.
Mm-hmm.
So the implication is quite different and the impact is quite different. But nevertheless, the key word is the COVID-19 and what do we do with it? So I think that's where the beginning, the similarities begin and end. Other than that, they will be quite specific, in the context of what they want to say.
So that was distinguished Professor Dato' Dr. Shamsul Amri Baharudin. He's the director of the Institute of Ethnic Studies at UKM. And he's sharing his thoughts on the Prime Minister's speeches, especially ones where the language used took a more conversational turn, sort of tried to be more relatable to the average Malaysians using examples like Makcik Kia and Madam Lee. I mean, we've all listened to mm-hmm. the speeches. We do work in the media. We have mm-hmm. to listen to them. But what do you make of the use of these sort of examples in them?
You know, I think you made a really good point earlier, you know, when we talked about the comparison between the first speech and the second, and then also the Makcik Kia stimulus package. And you can see which ones sort of caught people's attention.
Definitely.
And which one went viral.
Yeah.
And I like that it was I think this humanizing language sticks in people's minds.
Yeah.
And I think that is important as a leader, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, you don't want to seem like someone who is above everybody else, yes, or out, mm-hmm, of touch.
Yeah, I think that's... I personally like the more conversational approach. Or at least have some sort of tone instead of just having the very formal type of language, mm, right? Because you're trying to address the whole nation.
Yes.
But to me, the problem does arise if you use a conversational tone, like for example, when you tell about like Machikya and all these stories, and then when, you know, it's like earlier we discussed, and then someone else, you know, come, like, oh, let's say if like an analyst comes and like, you know, actually breaks down what is being said, so you're actually, all these stories just fluff, when in reality, the story doesn't actually have the same weight as what it's being said, you know, it's like, right, a lot of fabricated
and kind almost of manipulative in some,
yes,
ways, right?
Yeah,
I think it's the time that these speeches have come in, right? People are mostly at home, mm-hmm, people are unsure about the future. So I think it sort of helps to reassure people a little bit more, because when you hear something that's in formal terms, you know, it's already difficult for you to digest what's actually been said. So to have it, and that sort of brings in that second speech, right, where you really need to just make it simple and, yep, clear. I think especially when you're trying to pass a message as important as what he was trying to discuss about the MCO, it, mm-hmm, really clear and simple messaging seems to be the most effective way to get people to understand what's really happening and what needs to be done.
Yeah. Yep. And I mean, it's also significant that, you know, whichever side of the political fence you fall on, mm-hmm, this government did not come in through a formal election. Mm-hmm. So, and they came in at a time when things were tumultuous, and this really was the first public, properly public engagement that Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin had to handle.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, and it was a sudden and also very serious, yeah, situation. And I think it took some time between that first speech and the, yeah, second to figure out what tone to take.
Because I think like the first speech, right, because it was so, I don't know whether it came because maybe he was in a rush or whatever the situation, it was just like, you know, let's throw all the facts without, you know, going down to the people's level. Mm. I think that's one of the reasons why it caused like this big mess. Mm. Whereas the second one, once he did tell the story and all, I think even no matter, you know, whether you're in the city or you're in the kampong who is not very educated, I think people sort of understood it better.
Mm-hmm. I also like I like the fact that we live in this age where political speeches become memes.
Yes.
It's almost in a way like you cannot take yourself so seriously.
Yep.
You cannot put yourself on a pedestal above everybody else.
For
because
sure.
No matter how atas you may be or you may sound, at the end, all of us are going to end up becoming a meme. All of us are going to be parodied in some, yeah, form.
I mean, we were talking about this yesterday, the Kasana Kasini, yeah, video.
Yeah.
And the fact that they recognize that this is a possibility, right? And
it does seem almost calculated to have that effect.
Yes, and because that way you are making sure that, I think like what Prof. Shamsul was saying, you're making sure that your message lives on, that people are going to keep perpetuating it.
Yeah, because I think now when they do craft their speeches, I think there's a bit of self-awareness there as well. They know what they're doing, because I think in one of the speeches, our Prime Minister actually came out and he said that, you know, what I said has already been turned into a song,
yeah,
you know, and stuff,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
So they know.
Yeah, so they know who their targeting audience,
yep,
is, and they know how to craft it so that people will actually be more open to the, mm-hmm, messaging behind it.
Mm.
So we were also asking you on social media, you know, whether you listen to speeches by political leaders. Right now, 54% of you say you only listen to parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
33% say you don't listen to speeches, and 13% of you say you do. And of course, we've received a few comments on this as well. Ross Yusuf on Twitter says that I do listen, but to make memes.
Thank you.
Keep up coming.
Yes. Amira Roy says, I wait for the news portals to write about it and for analysis as well.
Mm-hmm.
Benji827 says that it's all the same nonsense. Michael tweeted that it's there's too much decorated speech sometimes.
Right.
So Yvonne Kaur says that I also listen to speeches done by their PAs, because speeches show that they all stay in their own ivory towers and forget what's happening on the ground, whether it's from the government towards the opposition or the opposition towards the government. They always forget that once they also came from the ground as well.
Hmm.
Mr. Jeffrey says that I do listen in case they make sense, which is rare.
Ouch.
PB Lim says depends on who is making the speeches to avoid wasting valuable time.
Right. And then we've got this gif that needs to be explained.
So
I haven't watched.
It's from Money Heist, this character named Berlin. And I think why he posted that gif there is because this character is known, like there are a couple of moments where he gives like these really, really powerful speeches, and your whatever you felt towards him like just turns like 180 degrees.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
So we've also received some comments on WhatsApp. Cheryl says that some politicians are so out of touch that even their attempts to be relevant reveal such a shallow understanding of people's needs. And she references the case of the Minister of Higher Education's TikTok competition.
Which just happened, sort of just went viral today, right?
Yeah. And then I guess it's the fact that people now do have other more pressing needs, mm-hmm. and this sort of feels jarring with what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Maggie WhatsApping to say that before the last general election, I rarely listened to what politicians or government leaders have to say in their speeches. Generally, whatever language it was delivered in, it mostly sounds long-winded. There's too much strolling down the garden path. Sometimes I lose track of what they're trying to say. And speeches with long introductions tend to make my mind wander as well. She also says that we are improving, but most of our leaders or politicians still need training in public speaking. So she uses the example of the South Korean foreign minister's COVID-19 speech, said that was very clear and concise. She conveyed the sincerity in her call for international cooperation.
Mm.
So I saw this clip that was going around, I think several weeks ago, and I think people were just really applauding the fact that she made it very clear what they were doing, what they wanted, and sort of there's no beating around the bush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no wandering this path and that before you get to what your point actually is.
I think that's the other thing, right? In the age of the 20-second attention span,
yep.
you want to be able to make speeches that get across the important point, but at the same time, you're not going to lose your audience by getting too much. And it's I think it's an art, and people are still trying to figure it out.
Yep.
But it is interesting, and I think particularly now when most of us are not listening to speeches live and we are just consuming them over screens, how can you craft it in a way where we get the message without losing our attention?
Yeah.
And I think especially now when you're seeing the trend, it's always short videos or short words that can easily sort of people just pass on, right? Mm-hmm. And immediately you know what they're saying.
Yeah.
And on that similar note of how leaders are resonating with people, I mean, yesterday's Health and Living also discussed how good leaders can steer us through a crisis, you know, but that was a bit more of a focus on how leaders across the world, including in Malaysia, are responding to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So you can listen to that conversation. Just look it up on our website, bfm.my.
So that's all the time we have for today, but you can continue to tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. And on Facebook, we are BFM The Bigger Picture if you'd like to drop us a message there. If you've missed any part of today's show, the podcasts are available on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m., we will have Roshan Ganesan with Ringgit and Sense. But first, here's Everybody's Talking by Moose on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.